This episode is brought to you by Nourish and Flourish, a handcrafted, independent publication taking readers on a journey from the soil to the stars. Subscribe today at nourishandflourish.site.
This week on Meet & Three, we're ringing in the start of our fifth season with dispatches from Portland, Oregon's biggest food festival, Feast Portland. We're bringing you words of wisdom on launching a food business from food blogs.
Most acquaintances from high school have now tried to start a food or fashion blog in some sense and quit very quickly afterwards.
To ice cream shops.
Every city you go to, the salt and straw is completely different than any other city.
We'll bring you insights and anecdotes about the business of the business.
We were like, cool, we're going to do this. We're going to try to raise $75,000 and we'll see what happens. And it was like the most gut-wrenching, miserable month.
Tune in to Meet & Three, HRN's weekly food news roundup, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Good morning. Oh my gosh, we've gone from 90 degree weather yesterday to chilly fall here in New York. Makes me very happy, which means you should know who I am, Emily Pearson. Today is Thursday, October 3rd, and this is the Main Course OG. I'm Emily Pearson, and I'm here in studio with my co-host, Patrick Martins.
Hello, how are you?
I'm very well.
Good,
it's, you know,
good.
Sweater weather. It's raining, it's but we've got some wine and olive oil in front of us to brighten our day already. So I can't believe September's come and gone.
And we had two big events in the past 5 days.
I know. I'm exhausted.
One in St. Helena, which was marvelous. It was at Long Meadow Ranch, right?
Yes, Farmstead at Long Meadow Ranch.
At Long Meadow Ranch. And Ted and Laddie Hall were there. Stephen Barber was there. We had Howard Hanna there from the Rieger. Alice Waters stopped by and gave a kind of keynote address. It was an award ceremony where some
hosted
people
by,
were...
Yours truly.
Ours truly, yes.
Ours truly.
Yeah. And yeah, that was really cool. Lifetime Achievement Awards were handed out, and
we
it
also
was just
had,
lovely.
Lou Fantasma, our butcher from Paradise Locker Meats.
Who accepted a Lifetime Achievement Award on behalf of all butchers.
Yes. What did you call that one?
Keep on cutting. Which is actually a word that Lydia Bastianich, it was like a kind of procession, and everybody was going by Lydia's in Kansas City to say hi to her. And when they were like, hi, Lydia, we do all your cutting for almost all your restaurants. And she's like, what the hell do I say to these people? So after like an awkward pause, she's like, keep on cutting. Next. They were like, all right, bye. No, but they actually named their kid Lydia. So yeah, it was all warm. It was lovely. And then last night, we did another event.
Yeah, last night we were at Huertas here in New York in the East Village. Which
a collab.
Is, yeah, it was a collaboration in celebration of Edwards Virginia Smokehouse and Edwards Country Ham, specifically the Suriano.
And Spain.
We kind of left Spain at the
front. It was
Spain-ish.
Front.
Yes. This is where we need Brandon for his little sampler, yeah. Little fire horn. So last night was at Huertas, and we were with Chef Jonah Miller, who's the chef owner of Huertas, and two awesome guest chefs, one of which is in studio with us today, Chris McDade of Popina.
Founder of Maialino. Huertas. Actually, you started
the founder of Maialino?
Yeah. A founder.
That would be impressive.
A founder. You were in the opening team.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, there's not
we're
only one founder.
All right, the founding crew. And then we also had Joe Tarasco, who's one of the culinary directors at Union Square Hospitality Group.
He's and more of an OG founder.
All right, well, I mean, you know, you guys came up together now.
Yeah, for sure. I've worked for Joey, Marta, and then, yeah, Maialino.
And Jonah said something very lovely. He said, these are two of the guys I would most like to be in the trenches with, like in an emergency, you know, when I was down in sweaty kitchens. These were two of my favorite guys to work with, two of the best guys to work with. So I thought that was really, really nice. And Lifetime Achievement Awards were handed out yesterday, too. So
they were. We had four special different kinds of rocks, all with feelings of support and transformation and power. And it was really cool. And I would be remiss to not mention that it is Goat-tober, which is really cool for us at Heritage Foods. It's the ninth year of our project to help put more goat on menus around the world and help reduce waste in the food system. And all the chefs that were with us last night, Popina, Marta, Maialino, Huertas are all participants.
And Farmstead participated and Farmstead. With the goat
In fact,
dish.
We had an early launch of Goatober last Friday night. There was a goat sausage on the menu made by Howard Hanna.
No kid left behind.
Correct.
And you say goat waste, it's because dairies, so especially in England, those countries that eat a lot of goat cheese, you know, the male goats at dairies really have no purpose. So you are fighting food waste by eating more goat.
Yes, we say eat them to save them, and we hope you guys will all visit Goatober.com and follow hashtag Goatober on Instagram to find there's about 40 to 50 restaurants just this week.
Just in the U.S. There's all around the world.
Correct, of course. There's just 40 to 50 restaurants from New York to California this week that are participating. There'll be more next week, and then James Wetlaw, our friend in England, is doing an international tour of, I don't know, 10 countries, including Trinidad and Australia. And he was just in Bra. Mm-hmm. Patrick, you set him up at Cheese.
Chris McDade yesterday is like, what do I do with the 14-pound goat? We're like, we're so sorry. My Scottish Terrier puppy weighs more than that goat. And then Stephen was like, I'm not messing with goat. Do you know how much livestock this farm produces that I have to deal with? I do not want a stupid goat. I was like, but what if the event goes really well? So he reluctantly accepted one more goat sometime in October.
So. Well, we are well represented here today for Goatober. So in the studio with us, formal welcomes, we have Chris McDade, chef owner of Popina, as we've mentioned, here in Brooklyn, which is over on Columbia Street, an awesome indoor-outdoor spot. You guys better get there before it
34
really becomes
seats,
winter.
34 seats in, 34 seats out.
Yeah, is that true?
Yeah, that's true. We the backyard's amazing, and it's great for the summer.
Are you going to heat it?
No.
No. All right.
I asked
It's that. A little, it's kind of wide open. And, you know, it's it gives us a chance. Like, so that in the summer, we're super busy. In the winter, in the fall, we get to kind of focus a little bit more and kind of, you know.
Although you could take a play from Farmstead's book. When they do outdoor stuff, they give out blankets. Which I don't know might be kind of gross. We were just talking about couches at restaurants. Maybe blankets are not a good thing either.
Yeah, there's a recent article. I can't remember. It was in one of the food magazines, but it was about like how all these restaurants are giving out their different throws. And I thought about doing maybe something like that at Popina.
Yeah.
So under a blanket, what's the Mile High equivalent at a restaurant? The three Michelin star high.
Anyway. We'll leave you all with that thought for now. And we also have Jeff. Is it Mizell or Mizell?
It is. Mizell.
Mizell, who is the Vice President of Brand Development at Long Meadow Ranch. And tell me the name of the other vineyard that you guys now work with.
Stony Hill Vineyard.
Which we have a wine right here.
So Jeff has been kind enough to send some wines and some olive oil in advance. So you guys might hear us sipping and critiquing along the way a little bit. So we are going to jump into our first segment.
The Weekly Based.
Is that how we're going to do it every week now? The Weekly Based. So we're going to play word association. We will say one word or term, and you have to respond in 10 words or less. So, Chris, Italian pasta sauce.
I think restraint is probably the best word.
All right. Wow. One word. What a start to the new segment.
Anna was not expecting anything like that.
So now you're to beat it. You're going to have to just make a sound like, oh, the only way you can beat him. No, one word. That is impressive.
All right, Jeff, go blue.
Go blue. Lifelong friendships and new ones.
And I did go to Michigan.
Opportunity to follow my passions.
I like that.
All right. And pay for a $72 sandwich at Zingerman's for Alumni Week.
Exactly.
All right,
I'm
Chris.
Here tomorrow. I will I'll
34,
get one for you.
34 plus a bar. Hospitality.
Anticipation, whether it's your guest or your team. It's more about like the feelings and teaching when it's on your team side, and then it's the expectations and the needs of your guests. So my partner James is really good about anticipating, so that's kind of like the way we roll.
Like radar in MASH.
For sure.
You know, he was always doing something before it needed to be said to him. And to be seamless. I mean, hospitality, it's nice when it's seamless, where you don't notice it, you know, where the person isn't talking to
you. Well, those
to
are to me the best experiences, where you've just come away and you didn't realize all the things that were happening around you, and that you felt at home, but elevated, but comfortable all at the same time. And I think that's something both of your restaurants do very, very well. Yeah. I've had the privilege of being at both, and most recently at Farmstead, is to be in a place like the Napa Valley and just to but feel at home is awesome.
So Jeff, your last word, soil. Associate.
Soil, energy, and working it. With soil, you want soil that has energy, which will then make great products. So energy, soil, work it.
Cool.
Amazing. Well, we're just talking about travel. So the next question in our weekly based is we're interested, you know, we have these themes we come across over and over again in our show. So ascending cities and descending cities around the world, either that just excite you on a personal level or ones that you think are just growing. So name an ascending and descending city. You want to start?
Sure. New Orleans for me is an ascending city. I love that town. I love going down for Jazz Fest as much as I can every year if I can. And I feel like every time I go, there's great things happening. Hmm. And there's so much soul in that city.
Does it change? Is that city always changing or is it always staying the same?
No, it's changing. Okay. It's evolving for sure. And it's gone through, I mean, in the time that I've gone there over the last 20 years, we've seen lots of changes. And it, for a while, it was a descending city, as we know. And it rebounded really well. And in the last 2 years, I've gone back and I keep seeing a great evolution.
And descending?
You know, I don't know. I'm going to London on November 1st, so hopefully Brexit won't make it a descending city.
Oh, interesting.
But I am a little nervous, but I'm also super excited to go to London. It's been a long time.
Mm-hmm. All right. Ascending cities that excite you?
Yeah, so recently we've been going to Charleston a lot, whether it was for Charleston Wine and Food or vacation. Mm-hmm. And the first time I went there, maybe 15, 20 years ago, it was you see the same thing on every menu, whether it's like shrimp and grits, waffles, you know, fried chicken and waffles, and recently there's been like a young refreshment of chefs coming in, and it's made for some amazing food. There's a restaurant down there called, now I'm going to mess it up, but it's called, I think it's called Ugly Fish, and they're just doing some crazy stuff down there, and they're great people, and we have actually have some friends from New York that work down there.
Oh, fantastic. No, it's a fascinating city.
I haven't been. I haven't been to either of those they cities, New Orleans antique, or Charleston.
One antique shop per person in Charleston, which is pretty cool.
I mean, the only thing is I have heard that they have a lot of restaurants, and it tends to be... But I know that they also have a lot of great tourism, so as long as they can all stay afloat, then
yeah, I mean, tourism's cool. Huge, right? And there's... You can't walk down the street without seeing 9 bachelorette parties, probably.
Yeah.
My brother got married in Charleston. And there are a lot of restaurants, but there's... Like I said, it's kind of like refreshing, and North Charleston's kind of growing a little bit, which is good. Yeah, I don't know.
I thought you were going to say Atlanta. Isn't that where you're from?
Yeah, that's an easy answer. And also, I haven't been back to Atlanta in a while, which
so is it is it descending or ascending?
No, so descending might be kind of controversial, but it's descending in a good way. I was going to say New York.
All right, I knew it. I could tell you're going to say New York.
But it's in a good way because I moved to New York, and it was to cook in the best restaurants in America, and that there's only one place to come. And now what's been bad for New York is great for the rest of the country. You can go to any, like, not it doesn't even have to be a big city, but just one with a little bit of size and eat a great restaurant from a great chef.
Like Little Rock, Arkansas, or, you know, any little town, yeah.
For sure.
It is interesting. Yeah, well, I think about a third of the restaurants in New York have to close. I mean, there's just too many restaurants. I still think more restaurants need to close. And also imagine these shitty restaurants in the middle of side streets and stuff. The ingredients they must be buying are terrible. You know, I want to see fewer restaurants get bigger and those groups get bigger. I'd like to see there be 5 Popinas out there and fewer, you know, some worst of the worst Spanish restaurants, you know. We'll see. There's too many restaurants right now. I mean, we were just talking about the Hudson Yards. I mean, there's 40 restaurants in it.
Well, the thing about that is, too, is that it still does feel like a mall. And I don't know, Jeff, if you've visited yet since you've been in New York.
We like Kawi, though.
Yes, we do like Momofuku Kawi. I mean, we also love, look, the Citarella in there is beautiful, but now they're competing with Whole Foods is apparently...
Who shops for groceries in the clothing
mall? I was going to say, Whole Foods is opening
mall.
At the ground floor. So who's going to go up to the third or fourth floor to shop at Citarella? You know, it's hard. So they say more residential is coming in that neighborhood. But, you know, you have to be patient for it.
But also, I feel like maybe the future of restaurants, like if you look in Japan, they shove them in every nook and cranny you can get in. And especially in New York or LA, as the real estate prices get so high, you're going to see more like second floor mall things. I mean, Engler's in a mall, essentially.
We were talking last night. Union Square Hospitality Group is growing down to D.C., and it's a hard market.
They have to hire 250 people.
Yeah, which is insane. I feel so bad for Joe for that.
Well, D.C.'s a tough city because they don't have actors and writers down in D.C. the way they do here. So they have a much smaller pool of people who would be happy to be waiters.
I get right. So what does that mean? It's only career waiters. It's not people who are looking to be you know, transient or part-time?
It's an issue everywhere. I mean, Northern California, in wine country in particular, yet alone San Francisco, the labor is the hardest thing. So to grow your business, mm-hmm. you're relying on a very small labor pool. And I think what you brought up, the quality of ingredients is, right. is huge. And we're seeing so many restaurants with bad quality ingredients, and we need
they should
sourcing.
Be shut down. Yeah. I mean, if you're buying the cheapest of everything across the board, unless you're a coffee shop, you know, or something like that, or a Ray's pizza, there's no reason for it, you know.
So
anyway,
for this next question, I'd like to drink some wine for it. Is okay. that okay?
Yes,
can
absolutely.
Can we pour a little wine
before you play sex, marry, kill?
We're allowed to say fuck on the
listen,
air.
Listen, the halls might be listening. Oh. We might have Chris McDade's. Investors listening.
Let's start with pink. Sure. Should we go with the rosé?
I mean, it is 10:15 in the morning after all.
And so this is meant, I don't know much about wine, to be shot like a thing of tequila. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. So Jeff is going to tell us what we're drinking, and then we are going to play a little game of Fuck, Marry, Kill.
Wonderful.
Which is Brandon's favorite show. I'm really upset that he's missing it today. I mean, favorite at
Salute.
Topic. Salute. Salute. Cheers.
Cheers. Very nice.
We are drinking the Longmeadow Ranch Rosé of Pinot Noir from Anderson Valley, which is up in Mendocino County. And it's all state fruit, 100% Pinot Noir from our organically farmed vineyard that we own. And it's a really delicate, elegant, great acid-driven rosé.
Does altitude matter with the quality of a vineyard?
It can, but not always. Altitude, it's all relative to what you're planting, where you're growing it, the soil, going back to what we discussed before. There's so many elements that make up terroir.
So why did you choose this grape in Anderson Valley as opposed to another grape? What about the soil adapts it perfectly to this?
So in the 80s or so, Roederer from Champagne, the Roederer family, came over to Anderson Valley and recognized this as a great spot for Pinot Noir, the cool soils, and for Chardonnay, for sparkling wines. And they were sort of the ones that really pushed Pinot Noir in this area.
But why not another grape? It just wouldn't, it would die, more of the
grapes
they
were,
would die.
As experts in Pinot Noir and Chardonnay for Champagne, they saw something in the soils of Anderson Valley. The cool soils by the redwood trees give great energy to the soil and cool and freshness. So they then planted specific clones for their sparkling wines and actually some clones from this vineyard that we acquired a few years ago. They sell fruit to that family. And so Pinot Noir and Chardonnay are probably the best grapes in this area.
Well, now that I'm extremely hammered, let's play sex, marry, kill. What are our three?
Wine, olive oil, pasta. Chef Chris?
All right. So I think for sex, I would choose wine, right? Because once you're done with wine, you can move on to beer or whiskey or tequila.
All right.
Or
I like
you
your mentality. Good. I like good. Your mentality.
Okay. To marry, I think it would be pasta. It's been, I've like literally cooked, eaten pasta in some form or other for the last 12 years.
You're a good Italian boy.
And then I don't know if I could kill olive oil, but it would have to be the last one.
What would you use as a substitute?
Butter.
Butter. Lard. That's the only other real option for everyday cooking, right? As a chef.
Well, we did say olive oil, so there's a little caveat. There are other oils.
There's other oils, but nothing. I don't think any thing can replace, especially in Italian.
What's the closest oil? Peanut oil? I mean, what would you use?
I mean, peanut oil might be an interesting, or actually for popina.
Mm-hmm.
We use this. There's a company in Georgia that makes green peanut oil, cold, and it's all cold pressed, and you taste it, and it literally tastes like green peanuts.
If you have a peanut allergy, can you get sick from the oil?
Oh, yeah.
So you have to write that on the menu?
This basically means and no one with a peanut allergy could come and die with him.
Into his life.
Yeah. We don't write anything on the menu. I hope no one's listening that cares about that, but we don't write anything on the menu. It's like, we leave it up. It's a conversation.
Except we're proud to source all our meat from Heritage Foods USA's Emily and Patrick. I mean, that's on the menu.
Yeah, well,
it says fine print.
It says meat, vegetables. Everything. We get everything from you guys.
You have to put lemon on it and like hold it up to fire.
No, popina has a very, 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 they're not lengthy descriptions. So you have to have that conversation with your server and you have to kind of ask the questions.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm taking a different turn here.
Okay.
And speaking of allergies, I figure I'm going to kill pasta. And it's blasphemy even for me, but at some point I'm going to be gluten intolerant. It's going to happen. Like it's happening to everyone, it seems. So let's just get rid of it now. We'll be done with it.
All right.
I'll eat the sauces. Like you said, you know, we restraint sauces in place of pasta. So I will F olive oil. I'll go out with a bang. It's good for the heart. And I can use all the other substitutes with butter and other fats. And I'm going to marry wine. It's gonna age well. It's going to be with me for a long time.
I think if I marry it, wine, I agree, then it's more readily available. You can just roll over in bed and have wine.
I was going to say, you feel like the effing it is implied. Yeah. And once there's marriage, Patrick's going to roll two into one.
One's a mistress.
Oh.
The F is a mistress. That's an exception. Mm. But that's how I see it. But that's very good. That's very good.
I like everybody's rationale.
Yeah, that's very good.
Emily? Mine's boring. I would have killed olive oil, married pasta, and I would have effed the wine. But I don't know. I see where you're at.
He's a bigger drinker than I am. I stopped drinking tequila and spirits, so I've just got wine now. It's like so.
Yeah, yeah, I'll start with a cocktail, but then I'm realizing wine's easier for the night.
Since some of us are marrying it, how much is that bottle of
that rosé? Retails for $25.
Oh wow, yeah. That's cheap.
Not that expensive.
And it's a small production as well. Yeah, we've always had the idea with our wine, our pricing, and then the style of we want wines for the table. You know, you've been to Farmstead. You saw we want to share the things that we grow and produce with our community, our friends, our customers around the world at
But you do have expensive wines too, or no?
We do. I mean, yeah. It goes up, but most of our wines are under $100. Yeah. They're in the $25
I quite like this
rosé.
For me, it's... It carries you year round. So often by September, I'm sick of rosé. They're all feeling too sweet. You've had so much over the summer. And we had this the other night at Farmstead, and it was very refreshing. It's light. It doesn't take over.
Well, Farmstead, I will say, is an industry place. It's where a lot of the winemakers go and hang and eat every day. So it's like a approachable steakhouse, burger joint. You know, it's just very everyday. And it's really nice to see the industry of St. Helena and Napa Valley and Calistoga, like where they actually hang out.
Must be that country ham they have on the menu.
It's a good everyday wine.
Yummy sandwiches.
Oh,
yeah, no, it's
they're
a great
host
everyday wine.
To the valley in a way at that restaurant. So what's our next?
Well, I was going to say, so speaking of, we pre-recorded a piece on Twang that's going to air at the end of this episode. I interviewed Sam Edwards yesterday and asked him 10 to 15 different questions about Twang. But for you guys, we just have two. What does Twang mean for you, and where does it live in gastronomy?
Nice specific Definitely. Question.
So I have I'm from Georgia originally, and I've become acclimated to New York. So sometimes people from the city will say I have a twang, and then I go home. I literally have they don't know what I'm saying. It's too clear. But I don't know exactly what it means. I think it's more of and I don't know what Sam said, but it's kind of like a sense of place almost. Mm-hmm. It reminds me of growing up. I go home and I'm hanging out with some buddies. You go to the bar, two beers in, it comes out full force.
Okay.
You know? But as far as gastronomy goes, I don't know. I think it's, at least for me anyways, it's kind of comforting. Because, like I said, it reminds me of, like, you know, my childhood and growing up and my family. So.
Twang, yeah. What does it mean to you?
You know, I have no idea. I have no sort of vernacular for twang with gastronomy. I have... Twang, whether it's the way I say water, living in California as a New Yorker, and I say water, they're like, they're cracking up. Like, where are you from? I think about dialects. I think about, a classic dish with a local riff. You know, that's the twang to me. That's the only way I can contextualize it.
Well, we asked it.
I didn't know this term until I met Sam Edwards.
Well, he uses it. He says that when he had the fire in 2016 and his plant burned down where he made ham, bacon, and sausage for almost 100 years, and he does it at other places now who fulfill his recipe and vision. The twang is a little off, especially on the prosciutto. Mm. You know, there's just a little flavor that you can't recreate that sense of place exactly like you guys were saying. And it is, I think, like a charismatic nuance that is actually uncontrollable by him, even in his own plant. And where a ham might be on the wooden rack, back of the rack or front of the rack, closer to the smoker, further from the smoker, different twang. So it's like a, you know, it has a spectrum, if you will. But when it's right, it's right.
He also told me that twang comes after funk. It's sort of this part of the aging process and part of how that as you said, the seasonality, that the air may be different, that there's something that changed, where it's hanging on the rack.
And pasteurization kills twang. Machines kill twang. You know, twang lives in the artisan spectrum.
Those are like yeast in a cellar, right? You've got microbes and yeast living. And if you switch buildings, if you're gonna lose something. You have to kind of build that back up.
Yeah. When I asked my friend Renato Sardo, a dear friend who had Baia Pasta for a number of years in San Francisco, I was like, where does that artisan magic live? And I always ask chefs this, and it was always a hard question to get answered. And he said it perfectly when he was studying at all the pastificio places throughout Italy. He's like, this is one guy. He was a real mentor of mine. Sometimes he opened the window a little bit. Sometimes you also open the door, so there's a little gap. Other time he closed, and I was like, that's where it lies, you know? That's a twang, if you will.
Well, and Sam also told me, and I hope our listeners will continue on to hear more, but he was mentioning that the twang will and can die with the country ham industry dying if it's not kept on by next generations. And so many of these country ham businesses are multi-generational, and that if it doesn't keep going.
Well, look at Nancy Newsom. She's going to be 70 any day now.
Yeah, I mean, we work with Nancy Newsom, Al Benton, Sam Edwards.
She's a boss.
She is.
Hers is the top ham. I mean, I'll say this with them. Her production is so limited. I mean, she makes a couple hundred a year, but man. That's the best ham.
But and then Al Benton's ham, too, has a, I would use the word
he's
funk.
A bacon man.
He's a bacon
man. He's the bacon
talk man. About twang. That guy is all twang.
Part but Jimmy Carter, part Robert Redford. That's what we say.
It's true. He looks, it's total combo. But for all of you who like ham, you should taste it and think about it. That Sam also says the twang is a little bit like that cheesy kind of flavor. He's like best equated to like the Parmigiano Reggiano, like that sort of flavor, the mouthfeel too. So
next question, this could apply to everybody. What wine and center of the plate main course should Meghan Markle serve to honor the coronation of Prince William or Prince Charles? No one knows. But I mean, if she calls and says, I want some American thing, like, what are you going to make?
Jeff, should it be the Chardonnay we have here?
And she's hosting everybody. She's hosting the kings, the queens, all the thing. This is that family's congratulations. You're now king. What does she serve? What's the most appropriate?
Patrick, should she serve an American wine or would that be blasphemy? Well,
let's pour while you guys decide. Are we going white?
I'll take wine. You'd want to take food?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, so. I've done, I'm really up on the royals. This is like a little.
Oh. I had to ask my wife. I was like, what is she doing?
And so.
It's not Chancellor Markle from Germany. This is Meghan Markle.
You didn't know who Meghan Markle was,
yeah,
Chris?
I don't know what that is. Gosh. I don't follow that stuff.
Okay. You know, she does make some of the English morning tabloids.
Right. Yeah. So, I say I'm not a tabloid.
Evidently, she's a big fan of Italian wine. And so instead of doing something classic like Bordeaux, she's probably going to go Italian, but. Evidently, she's a fan of Tignanello, one of the first Super Tuscans. But what I would argue is that she should go with something even more elegant, more classic, more timeless, which is from Monte Bertine, Le Pergole Torte.
So you wouldn't try to get her to buy American, equivalent
I would
of
try.
That?
I would try.
What is American equivalent of the one you just mentioned?
There is no American equivalent.
Okay.
Now, but then you can take a classic from America, and actually, like you said, Emily, this Stony Hill Chardonnay is long-lived, it ages beautifully, it's elegant. It's classic. It's timeless. It goes back to 1952, the first vintage. So doing something timeless and elegant, I think, would be the way to go.
So what is this Italian wine?
Oh, Le Pergole Torte. Yeah. Biodynamically farmed, elegant, beautiful, 100% Sangiovese. Started in 1971, around the same time Tignanello did. And it's the purity of Sangiovese. They're inside Chianti Classico, but they never called it Chianti Classico because they wanted it to be pure Sangiovese, which was illegal back then. It was illegal to have 100% Sangiovese within Chianti Classico. You had to blend in white grapes and others. And they said, we don't care.
Am I right that my wife and I ordered a few cases of the Long Meadow Ranch Sangiovese and loved it?
Nice.
And it was then it got more expensive, and so we went to other kinds. But I remember once it was a real deal, and we got 12 bottles, and it was
did
one of my
favorite
ones. Did
you forget to change the vintage year, and you just, they kept giving
I'm like,
the
I want
older
something
ones?
Fresh.
Yeah,
I
we
want
make a
new.
Small amount of Sangiovese up on the mountain property, about 150 cases. And it's called Peter's Vineyard. Ted Hall is a big fan of Tuscany. Big fan of Sangiovese and really wanted to have a little piece of that. Mm-hmm. And it's definitely the California terroir, but we're mountain fruit. So it's probably our most elegant, restrained wine from Napa Valley.
We loved it. And this would be served with.
So I have two thoughts in life.
It's like before I knew who she was and after I knew.
So one is to be unapologetically American. And that's like Budweiser, Jack Daniels, and barbecue.
All right.
To be okay. Like, this is how we're going to do it. Welcome.
She might get kicked out of the family for that.
It's okay. That's what we do, though. It's like 100% and what you like there. Yeah. Give her a ticket.
She doesn't care about being, you know, on the outside.
And then the other was to do like her best St. John's. So I would try my best to.
St. John's, the restaurant in London.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. It's like one of my favorites.
What chef, famous chef?
Fergus Henderson.
Jeff Henderson, mm-hmm. Right.
And
who's opening in LA?
Which is kind of crazy.
That's wild.
I'm going to reserve my thoughts on that.
Okay.
In a mall, probably.
Speaking of, that's like kind of fed into the New York declining because it's like, why didn't he come here?
Mm. It would have saved him 5 hours.
I was
going to
say it would have been a much shorter flight. All right, continue with this.
So
chain,
it would be, you know, like
idea.
The bone marrow, the pies, the great green salad he does. Like, just try to recreate their best meal at St. John. And then for the wine, I'm not sure if this is true, but I think I remember hearing this somewhere, and you can correct me if I'm wrong. But somewhere in England, they have similar soil to Chablis, and it's kind of like this sub thing that runs through. And I doubt it's as good as champagne because nothing is, but it's something like that, right?
There's some great sparkling wines right now. Haddingley Valley is a producer in England making beautiful classic method, so champagne method, sparkling wines right now. And I believe that, talk about ascending and descending, we're going to see even better and better sparkling wines coming out of the UK.
Is it just so expensive for us to get here? Is that why we don't see it?
Supply and demand, I think, more than price. It's actually should be the same or lower than champagne, but there wasn't a market for English bubbly. And now we're starting to see it. This Haddingley Valley one has a good importer. They're getting out there. The producer comes to the market and shares stories and shares the product. And that's
you never think wine, I guess. It's always like a pint. You always think pint when you think of wine.
I think, well, so maybe you need to blend your two ideas here. Maybe this would be like the, you know, you would do a Budweiser alongside an English wine, and then you would have a single rib alongside something a little bit more, you know, alongside bone marrow.
Well, let's take a little pause so Megan can finish taking her notes.
Because she's obviously our best listener.
All right, question.
Do you see that little dot, Matt, across the pond? Is she listening?
He's like, hello. So what
she's
is your...
American.
What is your earliest food memory? We actually came up with this question looking at one of your bios.
It was Popina's website. I told Chris, I love how it's laid out. It's fun. It's approachable.
I
feel like you know the chef
sun-kissed,
before you walk in.
Sun-kissed. Those first iterations of sodas that came out. I grew up
the sugar
in
got
early
you.
70s. Dr. Pepper. God, I worship those tastes. And I know they were artificial, but I do suspect that they were made with more real juice back then and more real sugars and all that. But, I mean, you cannot deny orange soda as a child drinking it for the first time. It was like crack cocaine. I mean, you wanted more, and it was delicious. And I know it's artificial, but I would say that.
I have two. One's on the east side, one's on the west side.
Like a West Side Story store.
I know. So there's this place called, I think it's still there, Lorenzo and Maria's, Maria and Lorenzo's on Madison on the Upper East Side.
So who do you remember, Maria or Lorenzo?
I think I remember Lorenzo. And they did a lot of wonderful prepared foods. I don't know who they sourced from.
Rugula? Is this going to go
no,
turn towards rugula?
No, does not go Jewish. Does not go Jewish. And it was a... It was a cooked whole stuffed artichoke, and my mom would buy one and we would share it. And I like first learned how to kind of like scrape my teeth on the leaves, and that the heart was the most delicious part.
So this is a story of hand-eye coordination too, just about reflexes,
sure.
Not biting your fingers. That's cool.
I'm insulted.
What's the other one?
The other one is, I mean, like Lox and Bagels, Zabar's, Upper West Side. Mm-hmm. And then there briefly was this place, for a long time on 86th and Broadway, called Williams Fried Chicken. God knows where the chicken came from, but it was so great. And the way that they fried it, it was like these crispy edges. Nothing was soggy. And every time you bought the whole chicken, they would always give any of the kids that were in the store like the drumstick to take with you. And it was in like a greasy little piece of wax paper, and I'd walk home with it.
Was it a sit-down or like a Crown's walk up and get it?
It was definitely not fast food. There were a few tables, but it was like a local fast food, I guess.
The best, probably.
Chef, what's yours?
Well, the earliest food memory I have is cleaning green beans with my grandma. So I grew up with my grandma and my mom and my brother. And we had a small...
And my brother.
My brother's great. If you're listening, you're great. But we had a garden. It was a small one, and it wasn't... no one wanted to work it. It was just like what we did, I guess. And we always had watermelons and beans and okra. So cutting okra and green beans.
Do you know about stressing okra? David Newman, our pork farmer, says if you whack the okra, it way overproduces. It's like it needs to be a little stressed. I don't know what he whacks it with. I guess a mop or something like that. And it gets it, or a broom, and it actually gets it to overproduce to the point where they have like hundreds of extra pounds of okra. Yeah. Chef? I mean, not chef, winemaker.
I'm not a winemaker either.
Brand manager, guy.
So growing up in a Jewish household, it wasn't gefilte fish. It wasn't lox and bagels that was that memory. For me, my parents were also gourmet Chinese chefs. They took these classes from this woman named Lucille Liang. And my mom got my dad the class for his 40th birthday, and he like went all in as a hobby. And then my mom joined him in like a year later, and they took classes and classes, and then they did these Chinese banquets at our house. And so I would peel water chestnuts as a 10-year-old.
Let me guess, you did it on Christmas. For the Jews, always order Chinese food on Christmas.
I was peeling fresh water chestnuts, like a prep cook for my parents. Then we had a duck hanging where my bird used to live, drying out for Peking duck.
Wow.
And then we would have these banquets, and I would also be a server for their friends. They would auction themselves off at the temple auction or the hospital auction.
So cool.
And they were like these immaculate hosts. And they wanted it in their house because they had a professional like size range. Now they have a built-in wok in their kitchen. They got so into that and the passion and the depth to what they went to and then traveled to China. And this wasn't just the basic Chinese recipes. They like went deep. And so that's where it began.
Test question to see what Chinese food gastronomic luminary just turned 100. Cecilia Chang.
In San Francisco.
Yeah, and Alice Waters had a thing with her and 100 years old.
She outdrank everyone at the party, I heard.
Do your parents still love Chinese food?
Yes. And like my kids and my nieces and nephews, they love his lemon chicken.
Wow.
I loved it. We used to order Chinese food once, twice a week easily because it would come so quickly. I used to imagine that they actually cooked the food on the bicycle, like on a little grill that was powered in their basket because it would come within seconds. It was hot and it was delicious.
That would be a good invention. A rice cooker on the bike and like a little fryer powered by the pedaling.
Well, you don't have that in San Francisco.
Food delivery, actually. It's going to cook as it comes.
Because you already have the battery powered bikes, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So before we take a quick break, I have a question for everyone. What would you do if you weren't doing what you do now?
I'd work sports. I'd like to work for
ESPN.
Would
you pedal that bike that makes rice?
Not in San Francisco, I wouldn't.
Be a baseball announcer?
Yeah. I play college baseball. I don't know if that qualifies me. No, but I would, or PR, unfortunately. I don't know what I would do. I fell into a very small niche selling endangered breeds of livestock to home chefs and regular chefs. I mean, not many people do that. I don't know what else. What would you have done?
I thought I was going to go to law school, and then that didn't really pan out.
Wow.
I don't know. I fell into this also. I just kind of followed my stomach, I guess, and ended up working for a chef. And I don't know.
What would you do, chef?
I don't know. I played a lot of golf growing up.
Really?
Yeah.
That or the Atlanta Braves, right?
Yeah. Well, the Atlanta Braves was they
Ted Turner.
Yeah. Ted wanted me, and I was I was like, I can't do it. I'll just watch TBS for the rest of my life.
I love Ted Turner, by the way. I know he was brash and crazy.
That's why I like him.
Me too.
That goes back to the barbecue.
Yeah.
Budweiser and. The Braves are doing great this year, by the way.
Yeah, they're in the playoffs. Congratulations.
Yeah, so I think some sort of golf. Also think some sort of sports analyst would be good.
Definitely a different pace from the chef life.
Yeah, well, I kind of fell into chef life. I was also supposed to go to law school. My uncle was the DA of Douglas County in Georgia for like 30 years. And if I would have went to UGA law school, he was going to pay for it. And I went to work for this law firm called Austin and Byrd. We handled the Enron case for the government while I was there. Like, I didn't handle anything. I was just like taking.
You made coffee.
Yeah, coffee and like handing papers out to people.
But it just wasn't for me. You know, it's like you do the same drugs in a restaurant as you do in a law firm. So it's like,
Well, by the way, Ted Turner, you know, he got his fortune. His father had highway signs, and they owned all these highway signs throughout the South. And he converted the money made from those signs, you know, promoting car washes or whatever it was, to getting that little piece of a satellite along at the same time that ESPN got a little piece of a satellite. All of a sudden, they could go above and beyond cable. And so he started a superstation to fight with NBC, ABC, and CBS. ESPN fought with every local sports anywhere. They became national. So it was just interesting. It was a moment in time where if you got a little piece of satellite, the whole world could watch you. And he started TNT and Turner Movies, and he bought all these old Hollywood movies. Amazing guy.
Yeah. You know, there's those turning points, right? Excuse me. There was one point where it was a freelance photojournalist. I was doing a lot of street photography, and then decided that was way too challenging, and I stayed in the restaurant business because that was less challenging. But I feel like another term would have been like if I just stayed in Italy. After I graduated college, I moved to Italy, and if I just stayed there, who knows, I might be making wine in Piemonte right now.
That's true.
That'd be pretty great.
Awesome. Yeah, well, we'll take a quick break, and then we will come back with the round robin fast interview part.
Which we really call the weekly grill.
Of the main course. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Nourish and Flourish, a handcrafted, independent publication taking readers on a journey from the soil to the stars. Nourish and Flourish showcases thought-provoking stories from around the world and stunning photography. Each issue explores emerging trends in food, nutrition, recipes, soil health, technology, regenerative agriculture, travel, and more. Volume 1 of Nourish and Flourish includes features on the Svalbard Global Seed Bank, the International Symposium on Bread, and ancient Hawaiian aquaculture. Are you interested in eating healthier and learning more about where your food comes from and living a more connected life? Subscribe today at nourishandflourish.site. For $29.99, you'll receive 3 issues. That's 38% off the retail price. Nourish and Flourish. Connecting readers with the people and stories that make a difference in living a more balanced, healthier life. Subscribe today or find a retailer near you at nourishandflourish.site.
All right, and we're back. This is the Main Course OG, broadcasting live on Heritage Radio Network from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I'm here in studio with Jeff Mizell of Long Meadow Ranch and Chris McDade of Popina. So this is the Weekly Grill. Jeff and Chris, what are your greatest strengths?
All right, Jeff first. That's me. I would say my optimism and positive energy are probably one of my greatest strengths. And then the way I connect with people. I'm out there very open to connecting and thrive in that environment.
So Chris? Not humbleness. Just kidding.
Yeah, mine's humbleness. No, I think your strengths come from your weaknesses at some point. And so people that knew me when I was younger again maybe laugh at this, but I've become very patient. And it's helped me not only in the kitchen when you have to be like a leader of young cooks, but especially now with my son. So I think patience is, yeah, I work on it every day. But
yeah.
That's good. So it didn't come to you to start?
No, not at all.
So what about Long Meadow Ranch? You are a brand manager. You don't live there, so you travel there. So you're an insider at the highest level, but an outsider. So what's it like to be a brand manager for a big farm?
Yeah, and so it's a little different than brand management in what I do, because brand management in our world kind of implies you're working like with all your distributors and working like kind of the B2B play. And my role in brand development is about how can we shepherd these brands and connect with consumers and trade and media and like put forth new initiatives, try new ideas, and keep telling the story.
Give us a great new idea.
So
that you came up with recently.
So a new idea recently was I connected and just with Chicago this week. I was in Chicago and I led a seminar for MBA students at the Booth School of Business. And they have a wine club. So rather than doing a wine tasting, which they do like a happy hour, we said, let's turn it around and let's provide them an opportunity to learn about the wine and spirits industry and the restaurant industry, hospitality, through the lens of a wine tasting. Mm-hmm. And so I had 50 second year and first year students that were really intrigued and wanted to learn about the business side and learn about how to order wine on a wine list and what to taste in a Cabernet. So it was a really cool way to connect with customers that will be customers for life and a global audience.
Chris, tell us about Popina and what is different about it than other restaurants, because there's so many restaurants out there.
Yeah, so Popina is a restaurant on Columbia Street. It kind of blends Italy with the American South. And Columbia Street's tough. It could be stupid, but we think it's good. What makes it, it gives us the opportunity to really connect with the neighborhood, which is good. And my partner James and I, we put a lot of work into that. So what we're trying to do is take years of working in, you know, really good New York restaurants, whether that's Maialino, Cafe Ultra Paradiso, a couple of places James has worked, and just kind of bring that to a small mom and pop shop. Mm-hmm. So I think it's just James's brand of hospitality is really good, and we just try to put food to match it.
We talk about mom and pop shops a lot.
I like mom. We talk about mom and pop shops a lot, and I'm a neighbor in Popina's in Cobble Hill in Brooklyn, and we're very grateful to have a restaurant with your mentality and your caliber of food and your brand of hospitality.
It's in the old Pock Pock. I thought a chicken place should be open there and call it Bok Bok, but never.
Some people think we're a chicken place because of our hot fried chicken.
Oh yeah, that's how good it is.
But your logo is actually a dog, right?
Yeah. So the dog is
that says gastronomy really good.
We had this kid walk by the other day, and he's like, "Sir," and I'm like, "Yeah." And he goes, "This is not a restaurant for people. It's a restaurant for dogs. There's a dog on the
door." You're like, "All right, I think you should come in and I'm going to serve you something."
So who are your mentors? Hopefully not your logo designer with the dog. No, just kidding.
His name's Massimo and he's great as well. I don't know. I think mentors are tough, right? It's like anyone that I grew up working with that had a work ethic is a good one. You know, and we could go, Joe Tarasco was one of those. Jenna Miller was one of those. And it's people that do it the right way, right? So, like, Danny's an obvious answer. Danny Meyer, Unis Cross Hospitality Group.
How do you define the right way?
Well, it's different now than it was when I was growing up. So, which has been challenging for people that have been cooking as long as I have, right? Because it's like you're taught one way to do it. You're not taught how to deal with it the other way. And then, so now I think it's, like I said, patience is one. You have to be a teacher. Honesty, and just always speak your truth, and then I think the best things happen.
Mentors?
Yeah, so when I was 25 and moved to Napa Valley, I had sort of three mentors sort of converge at one time, and I was a young New Yorker, brash attitude, and came to run a restaurant, manage a restaurant with 100 people, mostly older than me. And I had the honor and privilege of working with Ruben Katz, who had run the Rainbow Room. He worked for Joe Baum. So I got his sense of hospitality. He's the guy
Windows
hired,
on the World, yeah, Four Seasons.
He hired Del DeGroff. Like, he understood so much about service and hospitality and running a room and helped me so much in setting not just the day-to-day processes, because that's training. That's not mentorship. Mentorship, I think, is the next level of how you see the world and approach your work with integrity. And then with that, we also had Karen McNeil, who is an amazing wine professional, and she was there as our consultant, so I got to spend so much time with her and learn on a culinary side. Simultaneously, we had Joyce Goldstein, a legend.
Joyce Goldstein, was that James Beard's personal assistant? No, that's Marion Cunningham.
Right, no, she worked at Chez Panisse. She was a painter and then worked at Chez Panisse and just fell in love and caught the bug. And she, with an Italian, like a nice old, like she was my mom, a home away from home, and Jewish, but with Italian passion and love. And she taught me so much for years, and having those people, I think it's important. So now to now I think it's about perspective. You need to, for me now, I have like professionals and friends that are in different sectors that I like to meet with quarterly or so. Mm-hmm. Have a coffee, talk, get a different perspective on life and work, because you can't stop that. I think you have to always be able to communicate with people.
So we got 3 minutes left. Tell us about why you're in New York.
Yeah, so obviously I'm here for this show right now.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yes.
And so, Chris, you're up? No,
what are you doing tonight?
Tonight, I'm going to be at Niche Niche. Great restaurant, cool concept, where I am the guest host of the evening. So I have curated the wines for the evening, four wines that are important to me, and they have a tasting menu and the four wines that I've picked, and it's going to be a really fun
night. Do
you
know who I would be pissed? Is that restaurant that named themselves Niche. They're like,
and
we're
one of the wines you're pouring tonight
is the one in our glass right now, the Longmeadow Ranch Cabernet Sauvignon. This is our classic Napa Valley Cab. And you used the word restraint earlier with sauces. Our wines are about restraint, elegance, and balance. Low alcohol.
That is very good.
And elegant.
It's definitely a red wine to drink in the morning.
Yes.
I put my stamp of approval on that. And Chris, what do we have to look forward to at Popina? I know the garden is closing, but you said you get
to focus.
Yeah,
the garden's closing, but our menu's small. So what that means is it's always changing, always evolving. And recently, we brought in Michael Calabro, who has been named our chef de cuisine. And not only is he a great cook, but he's also like a man of the market. Like I think his greatest strength for us is he literally knows every farmer, what they're coming, what's coming. He planted for Zaid at Norwich for a while, so he has like this whole seed catalog. He knows everything. So, yeah, I'm just excited to see what he's going to do and how he's going to help push the restaurant forward.
That's a great asset.
Yeah, well, thanks amazing. So much to our guests, Jeff Mizell, Chris McDade, for coming on.
Thank you, guys.
Now we're going to hear a little bit about Twang from Sam Edwards.
Thanks so much for listening.
So this episode is all about Twang, and I'm in studio here with Sam Edwards and Keith Roberts of Edwards Virginia Smokehouse. Welcome, guys. Thanks for being with us.
Glad to be here.
Thanks very much, Emily.
Of course, absolutely. So this episode is all about Twang. Sam, what is Twang and how do you spell it?
Twang, T-W-A-N-G.
But word on the street is it sometimes starts with an apostrophe.
Don't know where that got started. Maybe it was just a accidental mark.
So should we omit it?
I would.
All right.
What's it omitting? I mean, what's it supposed to be?
That's a good point. Yeah. All right. So T-W-A-N-G, Twang.
So Twang. People ask me what the flavor profile of fermented cured meats, whether it's a sausage or ham that we make. And over the curing process is a flavor that begins to develop. And we know that we're there once we get to the flavor profile that we call Twang. And I wish I could give you a better description than that, but it's a little bit of a, when you eat Parmesan Reggiano cheese, the bite maybe of that cheese when you taste it is that really full body flavor, and that's what we're looking for in a ham. And up to that point, the flavor profile of the ham changes from the time it's about 70 days till we released it at about 18 months, so it's a very mild ham, mostly porky taste and that porky salt. And then it gets to about a year old, it starts to get funky. and when I say funky, it gets kind of a cheesy bite to it or taste.
Now, is your Suriano your only product that you'd say has twang?
Yeah, well, the smoked sausage, if you let that sit for or age for, I don't know, 30 days in your refrigerator, it gets a little bit of that twang. If you've ever had Lebanon bologna before, instead of Pennsylvania.
I haven't. I figured it must be
Or salami.
An Amish thing.
When you, right. So salami also has that twang, the smoked sausage that we make if you hold it at 40 degrees for a month, maybe 2 months in your refrigerator, it starts to develop. But so in the curing of a or aging of a ham, it starts out with the maturation to eventually have the twang. And right before the twang is this little bit of funk that you get with it. And you know that you're getting close at that point.
So does your twang change depending on where you've cured your hams?
Yes. Terroir makes a big difference in, they all have a twang eventually if you age them long enough. Excuse me, but everyone creates their own flavor profile. You can do everything exactly right, start off with the same fresh port, cure it the same amount of time, same ingredients. But by the time it's fully aged, there's going to be some minor differences in the flavor profile. Also depends on when you smoke. I know some of these guys that they don't smoke at all, so it definitely imparts a different flavor. And if you don't smoke at the right time, if you wait too late in the aging process, to me it doesn't absorb enough smoke. A lot of people think smoke's not a good thing, but I do.
So on that note, does every country cure master... country style cure master who smokes their ham, do they all refer to this twang, or is this a signature of Edwards?
Well, first of all, there's not many people that age a ham that long.
That's true. So. No, but not many people are aging and smoking.
Right.
They're doing a quick cure and a smoke, right?
Right. I mean, normally, I see other producers. The oldest you might see is 10 or 12 months. But to me, and you'll start to get that flavor profile. You'll actually, around 14, 15 months, once you get out of the funk a little bit, it actually has, to my taste, an apple-y sweet taste to it. And then it evolves into this twang that has, again, the only thing I can compare it to is that Parmesan cheese or salami.
Luckily, those are a few of my favorite things. So it's a mouth-watering description for sure. And can there be bad twang?
No.
No such thing as bad twang. Keith, do you agree?
If it's twang, that means it's been in the right direction.
So twang is always a positive. Twang if it gets the twang,
but
it's
can
a
have
good thing.
Funk can be too funky. that to me is. Because really, during the curing process, you're right on the edge of spoilage. And if you go too far in one direction, you get too much of that cheesy, funky mm-hmm. taste. Eventually, that will go away if you age it long enough, in my observations. But sometimes it goes too far in the wrong direction, and you can't recover.
And does seasonality change twang?
You do have to go through the seasons. Yeah, winter, spring, summer, fall. And then back into the summer sweats again to
get the proper funk to the proper twang.
That's.
I think we should write a song, a little funk twang song.
There's now, a George Clinton song in there somewhere.
Yeah, yeah, we've got the funk for sure, but we've got the twang. I think we need to do it. And then, do people understand it? You know, is it off-putting to people? Are they then excited when they hear about twang? Like. How do you get people to embrace the twang or understand it as a term?
Well, I think the key is most people don't know what it is. So one of the things, we always try and educate folks across the board on, Sam and I went back and forth on funk and twang for a long time. For me, twang, there's almost kind of this unbeknownst sourness, but in the best way possible, going with the umami. Of the dry cured ham. I mean, it's a really kind of, I'll use a Patrick word, ubiquitous thing going on that's tough to define, but you know it's there. And most people, when they taste twang, they're not sure what it is, but they know they like it. So that's where, our goal, whether it's the great artisanal ham tasting that we did or any event that we do, is try and educate folks to this is what we're looking for the hams that we do at Edwards.
That's very cool. No, and I think it's like a seeing is believing, tasting is understanding. It seems like it's a hard word to define. Speaking of, is the evolution of food production killing twang? Like, are you fearful that twang will go extinct, for lack
of
a better term?
Well, I think the country ham industry...
But that's never going to happen, right, Sam?
No.
You're going forever.
Not in my lifetime. I think that'll stay, but at the same time, you have to have people aging the hams that long. Over the course of time, the Suriano ham that we make now was typical of hams made in Virginia. And then, so how did people start to make them cheaper? Because the grocery stores were saying, if I could just get another 10 cents a pound off, before you know it, you're selling 70-day-old salted pork country ham. And that's kind of where the country ham industry has gone until some in the industry recognized that we needed to provide some competition for the imported European-style hams, which now there are close to 2 million Italian and Spanish hams imported into this country. So why is that? When the country ham industry is shrinking, and they're growing, and they're selling it at huge prices in comparison to country hams, kind of tells you, in my mind, the direction the country ham industry should go. But usually because they're multi-generational businesses, they're family-owned, it's kind of like farming. Sure. Small farms are getting bought up by the huge industrial type farming, and the same thing may be happening in the country ham industry.
Well, I have a newfound appreciation for twang. I've always enjoyed your Suriano, and I think I've used the smoky terms, a little bit of funk, but I love this idea that you have to have the funk to get to the twang. Are we going to make new swag that says twang? We talked about it the last time I saw you.
Sammy, the fourth generation, actually did design a shirt. We just haven't pulled the trigger on the twang t-shirt.
Well, I think you need to pull the trigger on the twang t-shirt and the twang hat. And in the meantime, all of our listeners can find your Suriano either through your website, which is?
EdwardsVAHam.com.
Or through heritagefoods.com. We are proud supporters of Edwards Virginia Smokehouse. And I like this idea that some of the sausage has a little twang. Am I allowed to do some additional aging of my smoked Edwards sausage?
I highly recommend it.
All right. I look forward to, we're going to do a little experiment and get a little more twang action.
Take a 12-ounce package. Well, besides keeping it in refrigeration for, let's say, 60 days, but also take a 12-ounce package and throw it in the trunk of your car and ride around with it for a while. It'll get there faster.
For real?
Yeah. And it'll be perfectly fine.
Yeah. All right.
And it'll be perfectly fine.
Does the USDA listen to this?
I sure hope not. But it means that it left your plant in perfect order, and it was my doing that I put it in the trunk of my car or walked around New York City on a 90-degree day.
Officially, 10 days off refrigeration is fine, but if it's warm enough, it's still off refrigeration, and you will get more twang out of that.
All right. Well, you guys heard it here. Twang, spelled T-W-A-N-G. Thank you, Sam and Keith.
Yes.
Yes, indeed. Thanks very much, Emily.
Thank you, guys.
Enjoyed it.
The Main Course OG is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.